Hey there, guys, and welcome to the Tamir Bay 2 podcast. I'm your host, Tamir Bay the second, and yeah, in today's episode, I'm going to talk to you about, you know, something a little bit more deeper, you know, than what I've previously talked about in some of my previous podcast episodes. And one of the reasons why is because for a while now, I've been doing my own study of humanity.
You're listening to the Tamir Bay 2 podcast, Lost in California, Season 2, Episode 4, The History of Understanding Human Intelligence.
Pretty much like my whole life, you know, I've been just like a bit different from other people, kids in that way growing up. I was always just curious about learning how, you know, the human mind works and what it meant to be human and what it means to be human. And so recently I have been doing a lot more research throughout the years. My research has been off and on.
So I recorded this episode on a whim, and I just kind of had like an idea and didn't really have time to really prepare the audio. So I did my best with trying to make it all work. So hopefully you guys are able to still enjoy the episode. Yeah, and you might have to actually turn up the volume just a little bit for this one.
It was more like a non-fiction, or no, it was like a fiction version of some of the research that I gathered already in like a story form that was kind of based off of a series of events that I, you know, calculated based off of researching the history of human behavior and trying to use the history of human behavior in order to determine, you know, just like actions and future like events and just different things like that. And so, you know, one thing I am happy to say is that throughout my research, I have gotten to the point to where I feel it is possible to determine the behavior or the actions of someone at a specific point in time by simply measuring or finding a way to measure human behavior patterns and connect those measurements with you know, different realities, different options, and just different things that a person might, choices a person might make. Essentially, what you would get is you'd get to the point to where you be able to somewhat calculate a person's decision making, you know, based on like certain scenarios and just the history of other humans that have made decisions with that same scenario, if that makes any sense at all. So that's a little bit about what I've been writing about in the background. I know throughout the previous podcast episodes, I've only ever something just like, I'm driving right now. Wow. I had to try to keep my composure and not get scared. No, I'm driving right now, and like something, I don't know what it was, but like a trash bag. It's nighttime while I'm recording this episode. And I'm actually coming back from South Beach to my next destination, which is Atlanta. I flew in from LA to South Beach and stayed in South Beach / Miami for like you know, 2 or 3 days. And now I'm driving back to I'm driving to Atlanta, and it was for my sister, because my sister recently had a tummy tuck. So I was in California and she had nobody to you know, take care of her. And so me and my mother flew in, actually we both flew in and just kind of took care of her. And so now I'm on my way back to Atlanta to continue to do that, because she doesn't have like a at-home nurse that's going to be able to continue the process. If you know about getting a tummy tuck and plastic surgery, yeah, back to, you know, today's topic and today's podcast episode. So understanding human behavior patterns and just understanding the human thought process and connection to being able to measure those patterns over a course of time, history, to determine if a person might make the same choice or if a group of people might make the same choice. And I know this might seem a little bit far-fetched, but just know that in some way, people do make a lot of the same choices in certain scenarios, especially when it comes to a lot of things. A lot of people think that they're making their own choices because of this. And so this is where you can get into, where someone says, hey, I'm making my own choices in life. Well, here's my thing. How is it possible that you're actually making your own choices in life if you can prove and it can be proven that someone has made the same choice under the same circumstances based on certain, qualities of your, personality, right? So let's say if we were able to use personality as a measuring tool, right? And then take that and let's say, once we're able to get that measuring tool down packed with personality and start applying that personality measuring tool to history and the choices that people have made throughout history, I think it'd be safe to say that you'd be able to, predict the future, right? So now, of course, yeah, you can say that there's been ways that this has been done already, but I'm talking about on a larger scale, on a, group of people scale, not just one individual person, right? Because, this has happened, this has been proven, and it has gotten to the point to where methods like this have been developed. So, I think that's what I really wanted to say. So, yeah, methods like this have already been developed and used in different areas in our world to determine if a person might do something, and so now here's the problem with that. The problem with that is that it got to the point to where I had to ask myself and say, okay, is it possible that a group of people can develop these methods based on culture, based on, because culture and just that part, it has a lot to do with a person's choices, right? And so let me just give you an example of what I mean. One of the things that I've kind of figured out in my research recently was that a lot of people in this world that we live in, a lot of humans, specifically within every culture, people dress the same way. They make the same choices when it comes to food. They make the same choices when it comes to clothes. They make the same choices when it comes to a lot of things, right? Now, to effectively say that, let's say someone is different, or one individual person is different, they'd have to not make the same choices that group of people have made historically, right? That's how you can determine if, one individual person is in fact different from the whole, right? So, yeah, so that's where I'm at in my research. So I've gotten to the point where I'm understanding, okay, the majority of humans act in the same way. But then at the same time, you have rare humans who are able to understand, life better, I'm not sure how to say that, but you have other humans, that act differently, whatever. I lost track of what I wanted to say, but let me just take a step back. So using personality as a measurement tool and using the personality measurement tool and applying that to history in order to determine the actions or future actions of a group of people, right? And the reason why I started thinking about this was because I just sat down one day and I'm just like, wow, I've traveled the world and I've went to a lot of different places, and one thing I've noticed is that people act the same in a lot of different areas, and whenever I go there and meet them, they all think they have individual personalities and they all, think that they're different in that way. But one thing I can tell you, and it's just, I don't want to say that it's sad, but it's just interesting to see someone that thinks that they're doing something different when you, as the outsider, can like take a step back, especially if you're paying attention to things like, studying behavior patterns or personality patterns of a group of people over time. It's just interesting to be able to interact directly with each individual on an individual, level, just to see, how people think and experience life in terms of choices and their human brain and why they might make some of those choices and just things like that, right? it seems, I know, complex, but the basic idea of, you know, what I'm explaining to you is that it is possible to measure the actions of a group of people and to determine future actions that they think that they might not make. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but if you can go back in history, right, and this is where I, you know, kind of started. I just started by like digging up history and just kind of going back in history and just looking at the patterns of men and women, for example, and the things that men and women have done over time and the things that they overlooked that are still happening, right? And I felt like the biggest way to measure this or to see if there is any possible measurement is to see if there is anything that has been overlooked mentally in terms of the growth process for each individual, you know, human, or to each sector of the species, like, you know, male and female, right? So what I mean by that is like, okay, so if like females, let's say females have never been the, females have never been like the, you know, people to the human female. Okay, let me just say it like this. The human female has, or rarely has been responsible for starting wars throughout history, right? So let me just repeat that. The human female has not been, or has rarely been responsible for starting wars throughout history, right? Throughout history, starting wars mentally has been something the human male has been responsible for, and most of the time initiated, right? So then it was the thought and the idea, like that part right there, I had to ask myself, why is it that men, let me just say it like this, in a regular way, right? Why is it that men throughout history have been the ones responsible for wars and like starting wars, right? Why is it that men have mostly did this? Now, yes, you might have had females that have started wars throughout history, but I would have to say that those females only started wars based off of learning from the examples of men. I feel like if men never started, you know, wars, or never showed that and never suppressed women, the female human would have never had to resort to even thinking about war in order to try to find peace and happiness in this world. So, you know, and this is where I think war becomes necessary, whenever you see that there is a threat to peace and happiness. So, of course, you know, I'd, you know, imagine that there'd be a females throughout history that step up to the plate and, you know, be warriors in that way and queens in that way, you know what I mean? And, or, you know, and not warriors or queens, but, what, you know what I'm trying to say, but just, you know, be the people to be responsible for starting wars, pretty much. You know, I think that females throughout history only followed behind men in that regard when they, out of necessity, not out of basic instinct, not out of basic human instinct, right? So that's where I'm at in my research, is studying the basic human instincts of men versus women throughout history in terms of how those instincts have how affected and still affect decision-making and personality patterns that can be measured to determine future actions, right? So I hope I said that well. That's what I've been researching. Normally, I'm having these conversations with my mother, actually, and like deep conversations like this. And so I love having these conversations with my mother because she actually understands them. And so, you know, we actually talk about them, like, as just like how I'm, you know, speaking right now. We actually just kind of sit and go back and forth and, like, you know, answer each other's questions. And, you know, I'm the one that starts these conversations. But, you know, it's nice to have her as like an intellectual person. And might add, someone that is intellectual and smart, that can understand these topics and these situations and scenarios, because it does take someone that is both intellectual and smart in order to understand something as profound and deep as, you know, studying the evolution of human history, or even being able to engage in conversations like that. So, you know, while I'm studying, I'm engaging in conversations with my mother, who's helping me with, you know, just kind of understanding things in different ways as I'm trying to figure things out throughout my research. So, you know, that is, you know, pretty awesome. And then I also have my you know, other family as well. My sister, you know, my, you know, other people in my life, my family mostly, that really help with helping to make these conversations possible. And so, yeah, just, you know, not conversation, but yeah, conversations possible, and just, you know, helping me to, like, decipher more of my research and just get closer to, you know, the truth and understanding behind humanity and, you know, why humanity is where it is mentally at this point in time. And so, you know, I'm really excited to research these things. I'm really excited to have them, you know, as a part of something that's I've been given as a responsibility from God, because I don't know what to tell you guys, but I can tell you this, that what your passion in life is something that you, that eats you up inside, right? That you just cannot run away from no matter what you go through in life. Like, especially, let's say you go through the worst, and that thing that's still eating you up inside is still there, even if you're going through all your bad moments. That means that's your passion. Stick to it, do it, and you're hearing it from me. I support you, okay? I support you. If something's been eating you up inside, you've been experiencing a bad or awkward situation. I'll say awkward because nothing is bad, right? God does things in order for you to better understand yourself. Always remember that, right? And so understanding yourself is very important, especially, you know, with the topic of understanding the evolution of human history and using personality as a measuring tool to study, you know, humans and yourself, you know, understanding that you are human and finding ways to better understand your human self is important. And sometimes you have to do it from a third-party perspective. Sometimes this perspective is the best perspective. The third-party perspective might not work for everyone. Sometimes, you know, people think different, you know. But for me, just from a research perspective, this has been my way of getting a better idea, an understanding of, you know, my work while I'm doing my research. So, yes, I have reason to believe also that it is possible to also measure intelligence or the intelligence of a group of people based on the amount of collected biology, or I just said collected biology, but I didn't really want to say that. And the reason why is because it just, I don't know, it doesn't sound right. So biologically, each culture has a intelligence that can be measured, right? The first way that you can, anyone can, like, just, like, notice or determine this is by simply looking at the types of jobs and the type of work that each culture is responsible for. So let's say, for example, Asian people mostly, and no disrespect, this is not meant to be racist. This is purely based off of social research and just kind of, like, you know, that part right there. So based on my research, one thing that I can say is that, for example, Asian people mostly learn how to do technical jobs in life. And so let me just give it to you like this. So my research got to the point where I had to look at the types of jobs that each culture was, like, responsible for, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, I need a starting point. So that was my starting point. So I'm like, okay, well, let's do it this way. So if, in fact, intelligence can be measured based on, like, culture and the color of a person's skin, how could I start? And where would I start? So I felt that focusing on the types of jobs that each country and that each culture, you know, produced, for each individual person as a whole, that was important. So this is where I go back to saying, okay, well, you know, most of our doctors are Asian and Indian, right? Most of our doctors are Asian and Indian, right? Most of our very, very extremely successful people are, okay, so most of the doctors are Asian and Indian. Now, you do have, like, you know, African-American doctors here and there, but in America, you know, and let's just focus on American, like, you know, America for a second, the American culture. So in order for this to work, you have to focus on every country's culture. But we can utilize America as an example, right? America is a country that's supposed to be integrated and that's supposed to not be segregated. But even in our work field and even in our daily lives, there is segregation, mentally, you know, and in terms of our education, right? So the reason why I say this is because, once again, you know, when it comes to certain types of jobs, you can pinpoint and say, okay, well, if I had to ask myself, what's the majority, or what's, you know, what's what group of people mostly take these types of jobs, or what cultures, or what sector of the human species, I would say, okay, Asian people. Yes, here and there you do see these other people. Okay, well, and then in what country? So I would keep doing that over and 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 over again, kind of like a spiral, until I got down to being able to connect the dots in those spirals consistently, right? And I would say you need a spiral to do that. Why? Because using a spiral, like the spiral system and this method that I'm explaining to you, will allow you to like get an accurate measurement. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. So, you know, I'm like, because I'm like, I've always grown up thinking that everyone was smart and everyone was intelligent and everyone thought like me, right? And I didn't realize that I was different from other people until recently, until I got older, and that I had the ability to like research and just analyze, you know, the human mind and mentality and just like social situations and just whatever, that part. And then I realized that also I didn't have to go to school and have an accreditation in order to have discovered something new or you know, in life. And so that was also another reason. I'm like, wait a minute. Why is it that, you know, when it comes to education in today's world, that if someone were to discover something that did not attend a, like, school or accredited, you know, institution or whatever, why is it that these people, or why is it that it's tradition to make the person feel bad or as if they're not, you know, capable of discovering something that is, you know, essential to mankind? You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was, I don't know, somewhat arrogant. I'm like, if I were, let's say, an alien studying the human race, and I had to ask myself, okay, why are these people less intelligent than the others? Or why is it that they're not discovering new things? Or why is it that the, you know, whole of the human race, why aren't they as interested in discovering things about humanity as before in history? I would say that institutions have been created that has made, you know, the humans feel over time that they've had to have these accreditations in order to be smart and in order to discover things in their world, if that makes any sense at all. So I feel like that would be a valid, you know, evaluation. Yeah, it would be a valid evaluation, you know, because just look at the majority of people. They're not trying, no one's really trying to discover things. Everyone feels like they have to go to school to be smart, and they have to, and that's not fair. It's very limiting. So, for example, let's say, okay, the smartest person in the world created all the schools, and it was just this one person. And let's say everyone thought, okay, well, no one can be smarter than this person. And let's say the schools that you attended capitalized on this, and let's say that education was only taught up into what that one person learned. And let's say that because of this idea that, you know, they taught other people that went to these schools that this one person created, that, hey, you're not gonna be as smart as this person or this one person. And so the culture and tradition of not thinking or not trying to think, you know, was created. And throughout time, you know, humans stopped thinking or trying to think, right? Does that make sense? So anyways, this is just another example of a part of my research, in terms of understanding the human mind historically over time, and the human male versus the human female, and ways that it might be possible to measure the future and to determine the future based off of previous things that humans have, or patterns, you know, based off of the history of human patterns and evolution, just things like that. Anyway, I know, I'm sorry if that sounded, if I didn't get that across clearly, but I am writing about it. If you want to read some of my research thus far, I do connect the research eventually to religion and science and just back and forth. And I even talk about topics like homosexuality and just all that stuff, you know, and just religion and spiritual and just science and body electricity and, you know, all that good stuff. So that's what I'm writing about. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just this one thing. And right now, it's just like a thing right now that I've separated into different topics that's going to probably eventually turn into a book or a movie and a documentary. I don't know. But the starting point is where I just explained, you know, continuing to research or researching ways to measure the actions of the human mind based off of cultures and comparing those cultures together and the patterns and things that those cultures share in terms of what they do that are different and that are similar or the same. So that might be, you know, does one culture or one country have a group of people that all wear the same clothes and then later on, you know, figure themselves out individually? Or does one group of people eat a certain type of food based on what the everyone else eats and then understands later on that this is something that, you know what I mean? So it's the idea of following behind, you know, another human and not thinking, let's say, about your actions and, you know, trying to figure out how to become a better human in that process. So as I said, this is what I'm researching. This is where I am in my research. If you are interested in researching, if you are interested in reading any of my research, I would definitely recommend subscribing to my blog. Right now I'm releasing bits of my research via my blog, and I've released one article so far, and I'm very happy to say that I've sent the article to like the Vatican. I know you guys know, like, the Pope just died, so coincidentally, and I don't know why, and I just kind of felt like it was coincidence because I really wanted him to read it, but the Pope literally died the week after I sent my article to the Vatican and to a lot of other, like, places. And I know that sounds like, you know, big or whatever, but I don't know. I just really feel like my research is a gift to humanity in that way. And, you know, as I said, I've been researching humanity, and I'm really happy to share this information and to help someone become a better human in that way. And this is something I feel that is necessary in order for us to grow as a humanity. We have to, and to save the earth, you know, and just to be better humans, we have to start getting to the point where we're trying to understand how our human minds work.
You are listening to the Tamir Beitou Podcast, Lost in California, Season 2.